and by a greater openness to the possibility that formulations of others at specific points may be of equal or even greater value than traditional Lutheran formulations. But theological and doctrinal statements can never pretend to capture the fullness of their object. This means that no dogmatic statement can be regarded as final. Like any other human grasp of truth, it is only a beginning, an incomplete expression. And when you are dealing with incomplete statements, you not only tolerate differing statements, but you actually need them. E. Clifford Nelson has reminded us in his excellent volume, Lutherans in North America, 1914 to 1970, and I quote, "This meant," as he speaks about the historical school, "this meant an altered view of the Lutheran confessions as well. They were to be seen not as eternally binding legal documents, but as historical testimonies of faith, confessions of faithful men who sought to safeguard the church's proclamation of the gospel in a given historical situation. Confessional subscription meant acceptance of the understanding of the gospel as witnessed to it in the confessions. He who received the gospel as taught in the confessions was a Lutheran." Contrast that once more with a quotation from C.F.W. Walter coming out of the 1860s. I quote, "Now, however, people in fact want not only an altered Augsburg Confession, but also altered catechisms, altered Smalkald articles, an altered formula of Concord. And here they are not so honest as openly to cross out the words that do not fit in with the new faith, but they have rather agreed to understand the words in a different way from what, as everyone knows, they intended to say originally. And why? In order that people who have long fallen away from the teaching of our church may retain the honor of loyalty and steadfastness, remain in our midst and shed glory on our church." I think this is really one of the great ironies of our particular history. When you contrast the events of 1530 with those of 1980, and now project yourself to Eduard Losey and Pope John Paul II meeting together. Keep in mind the agonies and the trauma of the Augsburg Confession. Keep in mind even the efforts of a Philip Melanchthon to renegotiate a doctrinal agreement between those warring parties following in the wake of Augsburg Confession, with Charles V rattling his sword as he looked at the Lutheran princes. And then see Eduard Losey and John Paul II meeting in Mainz not too long ago. And what is that Eduard Losey suggested was separating Lutherans from Catholics? One, the refusal of Catholics to allow Lutherans to commune in their churches. Two, Catholic restrictions which permit ecumenical services only on weekdays, never on Sunday. Three, Catholic refusal to recognize marriages between the members of the two faiths. Can you, as a Lutheran, make that jump from 1530 to 1980? What had happened to the Augsburg Confession, to the confutation, to the apology? After that conversation, Losey pressed the Pope still farther and encouraged intercommunion, and John Paul II replied to him, "My good man, first we have to seek doctrinal unity before we can have intercommunion." What would the confessors, what would Philip Melanchthon, with his clay feet, have said if he had witnessed that conversation? I think the real hope for a strong, exuberant, joyful Lutheranism on a global proportion is to recommit ourselves once more to our confessional writings. An apology for the apology. I think, friends, that a defense of the apology and of all Lutheran confessional, historical confessional documents is patently needed today. Let me share the final comment once more with the words from Walther, which you have heard earlier. "Upon the doctrine contained in these books and upon none other, the first Lutherans were united in ecclesiastical fellowship. Upon this book of confession, therefore, the Lutheran Church is founded, for through it she has come into being, and through it she distinguishes herself from all factions and communions in Christendom. Therefore, he who says, 'I want to be a Lutheran,' confesses thereby and professes his adherence to the symbolical books and to the doctrine contained in them. And he who says that he wants to be a Lutheran pastor confesses therewith not only that he holds the articles of faith in these books to be true and right, but also that he will preach them, defend them, and seek to spread them as God gives him grace and power so to do." Peggy Way of Vanderbilt had said, and I'm sure that this recalls the post-World War II period in American history, the great ecclesiastical decade of the 1950s, the confused and rebellious 60s, and now the 70s and the beginning of the 80s. "Having," I quote, "having moved people from authoritarianism to autonomy, we must now help them to discover what is authoritative. If we can accomplish that, I think that we will have made a contribution to the life of Christendom in our day." Thank you.